we want account people to be out leading the charge in terms of the definition of scope of value, defining the success metrics, putting together programs and recommendations to solve business problems, rather than organizing this list of deliverables and making sure that, you know, we're sticking to our time estimates. It's a frustrating job. I think today's account management job is a lot less rewarding than it used to be 30 or 40 years ago.
Welcome to the Creative Agency Account Manager Podcast. I'm Jenny Plant, and I'm on a mission to help account managers understand the agency business and develop an entrepreneurial mindset in their role so they can show up as a commercially aware advisor to their clients rather than a reactive order taker. Welcome to episode 117. This episode is going to be very relevant for you if you're responsible for pricing your agency's services. I first saw Tim Williams speak at an IPA conference in London in 2016. And he was talking to agency owners back then about why they needed to ditch the billable hour if they wanted a profitable business. And I've been following Tim's work in agency pricing and positioning ever since. And for me, he's been the consistent voice of sanity throughout the years. So as you can probably imagine, I was very keen to have him on the podcast so you could hear from Tim directly and learn more about his thoughts on the agency business model. So I'm going to introduce Tim fully in a moment, but here are just a few of the topics that we cover. We talk about why the time-based billing system doesn't work for agencies. We also talk about how generative AI is only accelerating the need for agencies to rethink their pricing strategies. And Tim shares key steps you can take right now to start the transition to premium pricing. So I would encourage you to follow Tim Williams on LinkedIn and learn more about his work by visiting his website, ignitiongroup.com. Let's go to the introduction now. Today, it's an absolute honor to have Tim Williams on the show. I've been following Tim for a number of years, and his work is read by so many others. Tim is one of the world's foremost authorities on positioning strategy for agencies and other professional services firms. Tim's workshops have been seen by business audiences on every continent, and his books and articles have helped inform the strategies and business models of thousands of firms across the globe. In his role as founder of Ignition Consulting Group, Tim has helped shape the future success of firms ranging from independent agencies to multinational agency networks. A big warm welcome, Tim.
Thank you. I'm delighted to join you.
I'm delighted to have you, Tim. So I'm going to get straight into the questions. I heard you tell a story about the origins of the agencies of the billable hour. Now, some may not be familiar with the story, but would you mind sharing the origin story of why agencies started billing by the hour?
Sure. I think this is such an important thing to know, because we assume in the agency business that it's always been this way. You know, those of us, I've been in it much longer, but those who joined in the last, you know, 10 years, all they know is one system. And it wasn't always the hourly rate system. If you go all the way back in history, the billable hour was actually created by an attorney in Boston in 1947, a man by the name of Reginald Heber Smith, who had the idea that they wanted to do a better job of understanding where the attorneys were spending their time so that they could distribute and manage workload. They never intended it to become a billing mechanism, but it turned into that and soon was adopted by most firms globally, and then modeled also by accounting firms and other professional service firms. The agency business didn't really get into the billable hour until the late 1970s, early 80s, because prior to that, it was the good old commission system, which actually worked really well. The full 15% on large media budgets and 20, 30% production markup fueled the growth of the golden age of advertising and made agencies immensely profitable for many, many years. It was David Ogilvy of Ogilvy and Mather at the time who was approached by Ogilvy's largest client then, which was Shell Oil, in their Houston office, who was experiencing a lot of economic problems because of there was an oil embargo back then, and oil prices were going through the roof, and Shell felt like they needed to cut their advertising budget, and Ogilvy was at risk of losing the account. So David had the idea, well, tell you what, why don't we just temporarily bill you for our time to get you through this rough period? And when things turn around, we'll go back to how it's always been, the good old commission system, which served us well. Well, turns out that Shell caught on pretty quickly that they were paying the agency less money on the hourly rate system and wanted to continue with that method. And shortly thereafter, the agency's other client said, hey, I've heard about this hourly rate thing. Could we give that a try? And then so soon all of Ogilvy's clients transitioned, and then other agencies around the world saw what was happening and adopted the methodology. David Ogilvy, and I worked at Ogilvy, by the way, in my formative years, and I worked actually in the Houston office for a while, and I was aware of all of this and all these stories. But David later really regretted having done that, and he repented on his deathbed in Tufu, France. He said, you know, that was a really bad idea. I wish I'd never done that because it took our industry in the wrong direction.
Wow. So he actually admitted he got it wrong. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
And it obviously spread like wildfire, because now what we see today is the billing system, the time-based billing system. So why is, and this is probably going to open up a complete Pandora's box, why is the time-based pricing system not suitable for agencies?
Well, my colleagues and I have a list of more than 100 reasons of why the billable hour needs to die. And it's really fascinating to have that discussion. But let me see if I can give you my top three. The first is that it really is not what clients buy. Clients don't buy our efforts and our activities and our time. They buy solutions to business problems. So the idea that we're monetizing time, but we're selling services and solutions, creates a real economic misalignment, which leads to my second reason, is that it is, in fact, a misalignment of economic incentives, because what the client wants less of, ours, we want more of. So we're pointed in opposite directions, and we wonder why there's such high levels of mistrust in agency-client relationships. And to me, that is at the foundation of it. And then finally, and this really, I think if you stop and think about it, as a career agency executive myself, you know, it really makes me feel kind of stupid, because I was a partner, president, CEO in a couple of agencies in my career. It places an artificial self-imposed ceiling on our revenues. You take the number of people in the firm, their total available billable hours, and you do the math, and you've just established a ceiling for your revenues and profits. Now, what other business would do that? That's a crazy thought, to put a limit on how much money you can earn, but that's in fact what we do. And it's created a non-scalable business model that has created a free fall in agency profits over the last 40 years, which we can talk more about if you'd like.
I would love to. And first of all, because you've been one of the people that I've been following for so long that's been consistently telling us this message. And yet, I can only imagine the frustration you felt. I do feel it's changing in terms of the agency's appetite to change. Do you see that yourself?
Yeah, it is definitely changing. In the early years of teaching value-led pricing, it met with a lot of resistance, and the early adopters were the smaller independent firms that had control over their destinies. The large multinationals couldn't see their way through this, but they finally have now, and that is completely flipped now. The most of the work we're doing with agencies are actually with some of the larger firms and some of the largest agency brands on the planet, and some of the most famous agency names are fortunately, clients of ours and have been through or are going through this transformation now. I think the reasons it's been challenging is that it's just habit and culture inside agencies. We've never thought that there is a different or better way. And worse, we feel like it's been dictated by procurement. Somehow we have the idea that we're not in charge of our pricing strategies, which is a ridiculous notion. Of course, we're the seller. We get to decide how we price. It's not the buyer's job to tell us how we should price our services. So yes, long way of agreeing with you that it is, the tides are turning.
Let's talk about procurement for a minute, because I know that that's one of the things that comes up a lot, is that, you know, oh, we can't value price because the procurement are pushing us through their Excel spreadsheet and want to see all the hours, etc. What's your advice maybe for mostly independent agency owners that listen to this, where they may be coming up against that? They desperately want to value-based price, but they have that mental barrier that procurement won't buy it.
Well, again, it's this attitude that we have that somehow we're not in charge of our pricing strategies, and we fret at the practices of professional buyers who give us these big spreadsheets and they say, here, just fill in your people and your hourly rates and we'll line you up on our spreadsheet. What we teach is that we need to change the conversation right up front. We want to politely disrupt the client's flawed buying process, because let's all admit, it's deeply flawed, isn't it? They won't allow contact with decision makers. They want spec work for free. Everything's a rush. They don't give us budget information. I mean, we all have a long list of what's wrong with the process. And we teach the idea that right up front, we want to signal to our prospective clients that we're not like other agencies. We don't believe that what you're buying from us are our efforts and activities. You're buying solutions to business problems. So let us show you a better way. And honestly, there is much more appetite and interest on the part of client organizations than agencies think. There is a study done by the Association of National Advertisers here in the U.S. every couple of years that asks what proportion of major marketers intend to change the way they compensate their agencies. And the survey almost always comes back with some figure like 2/3 of all global marketers say, yes, we want to change the way we pay our agencies. Well, why? We suspect the answer is, well, of course, they want to cut costs. They want to pay us less. That is not the leading answer. That's maybe number 9 or 10 on the list. The leading answer is we need to improve business results. And they realize that the way they pay agencies for just filling scopes of work and taking orders does not align with helping them drive growth. And so the smart clients, the ones that most agencies want, are actually very interested in a discussion about how could we change our business relationship? Tell us more.
So this might sound like a silly question. I know you said you've done a lot of work through the years with independent agencies. You're doing a lot of work with multinationals right now as well. Do you think there's any difference in how procurement see either? You know, I'm dealing with a network agency and therefore I'm going to be more flexible in the compensation, or I'm dealing with an independent, I'm going to be more flexible.
I don't think so. I think the dynamics are the same, because let's keep in mind that we taught them this system. It's not their system. It's our system. And we taught it to them, as I said, starting in the 1980s, 1990s. If you're an account person in an agency in the mid to late 1980s, you would have set appointments with your clients and gone to meet with them and say, you know, all that you've been paying us commissions and markup all these years. Well, we'd like to propose a different way of working with you. We want to start doing timesheets and billing you by the hour. And we had to persuade our clients to this new way of remuneration. And some clients were reluctant, like, well, I'm not sure that's such a great idea. I kind of like the commission. I mean, so we had to move them to a new way of thinking. Well, we're at a point in time where now we have to do that again, right? We're in charge of our pricing strategies. And this happens all the time in other business sectors. The airlines have re-educated us on how they want us to pay for their services. Software mm-hmm. companies used to sell their product on a CD in a shrink wrap box with a price tag on it. They've re-educated us now that they want us to subscribe to their product and that it's a license. We don't actually own it. You can take any business sector, and there have been ongoing, decades-long changes in pricing strategies that we as customers have all adapted to. And that's all we're saying with agencies. And by the way, when we talk about value pricing, a lot of agencies react as though this is some kind of crazy experimental thing that could never work and that it's leading edge. But it's really just modern pricing. It's just pricing as practiced by the rest of the business world. We are almost alone in the professional services sector in the old industrial age practice of billing by the hour. None of our clients do timesheets. They don't bill by the hour. They run very successful enterprises. So we're just trying to drag the agency business kicking and screaming into the modern era and say, hey, you can adopt the same kind of pricing strategies that your clients use. Just apply some innovation and creativity to it.
You must be exhausted of giving that message out, Tim, because I know through following you for so long, it made so much sense then. It makes so much sense now. And yet we're still not doing it. Yeah.
If you don't mind, can I just try and simplify it one step further to demystify it? Because really all we're talking about here is moving from inputs-based pricing, which is tracking time and charging by the hour, to pricing for outputs and outcomes. I mean, that's basically what this is about. So instead of charging for the hour or the person or the FTE, charge for the deliverable, charge for the actual work product, charge for the output itself. Attach the price to the output, not the input. It's not about performance-based pricing. You can do performance-based sometimes. Occasionally, you'll have a client where that might be an interesting approach. But a lot of agency executives confuse value-led pricing with performance-based pricing. They're not the same thing. Performance-based is a form of value-led pricing, but it does not equal value-led pricing. It's essentially trying to teach agencies to price the product, the service, the solution, not the person, the hour, or the FTE. That at its basis is what we're trying to do.
Why do you think there's more of an urgency now more than ever to wake up to this?
Well, over the last 40 years, there has been a well-documented decline in agency margins. 30 years ago, the average agency profit was 30%. Today, it hovers around 10%. This has been documented by my friend Mike Farmer in his book, Madison Avenue Manslaughter. He writes about it every week online. And so that has been taking us toward an economic cliff. But I would say in the last 12 months, the final nail in the coffin of the hourly rate is artificial intelligence. Are we going to bill by the nanosecond? How do we monetize and capture the value of what AI can do in an hourly-based business model? It simply doesn't work. So for all the agencies that have been skeptical and holding back and saying, no, we really can't do this, are going to be pushed within the next 12 to 14 months to do something different. And our answer is stop being slaves to the billable hour and find ways to, and this is another topic, productize your business in a way that allows you to capture the value of AI by baking AI into your solution sets and therefore capturing the value of it irrespective of how much time is spent.
Let's talk a little bit more about productization. I was lucky enough to speak to Michael. I've read the book, Madison Avenue Makeover.
Makeover, yeah.
Which is obviously Huge's journey through that productization exercise. You're obviously helping firms transition safely to a productization. First of all, to give us some maybe good news stories, can you share some examples of agencies you've helped navigate that transition and been successful with that?
Sure. Well, our client relationships are all confidential with a few notable exceptions. If they've chosen to speak publicly about it or if it's been in the business press, I can name those names. I mean, some of the large multinationals like TBWA and Publicis Health and huge mid-sized firms like VCCP, and then a lot of notable famous creative shops that, you know, if I named them, you would certainly know the names. We're just kind of hyper about protecting our client confidentiality. But we've worked with every single one of the large global holding companies, WPP, Omnicom, Publicis, Dentsu, Havas, Stagwell. We've worked with them at a corporate level. We've worked with many of their agency networks. And I can tell you that there are many more agencies on this journey than most agency execs might realize. Many firms are pretty protective of this because they consider it a competitive advantage and they don't want to go public. Others see it as a notable differentiator and write and speak about it all the time, such as Anomaly. They're such a great example of most of the principles around value-led pricing. So there are more firms that are practicing it than you might have heard about. But again, it's because they consider it a competitive advantage.
And can you kind of give us an insight into how you work with those companies from a standing still to a transition and maybe the impact of making that transition?
Sure. That's a really good question. Well, there are three stages in this work. The first we consider kind of a foundational educational phase because most agency people have never heard the argument for revenue model transformation. They just come to work and fill out their timesheet and, you know, try to do a good job at work. So first we try to shake up the paradigm. You know, we need agency people to adopt a new paradigm, a new mental map about what they sell and what clients really buy. We're trying to disconnect this idea that labor equals value, right? That's an old, outdated notion that goes all the way back to Karl Marx, you know, the labor theory of value. That's been, you know, long since disproven. So change the paradigm. Next, we need to change the principles and instill new principles inside the heads of agency execs. For example, that cost is a calculation, price is a judgment, right? A lot of people can walk around and estimate costs, but it takes people who understand pricing to make the decision about that. Another example is that pricing should be done from the top down, not the bottom up. When we start with our costs and work our way up to a price, economists look at that and say, well, that's not pricing. That's just bottom up costing. The rest of the business world prices top down, starting with the question, what's the potential value to our customer of what we're about to do? And then they get to cost. So it's exactly backwards from the way the rest of the business world approaches it. We also teach the idea of a diversified pricing portfolio. Right now, agencies have one source of revenue, hours, time, percent of FTE, staffing plans, one way they earn money. We teach the idea that you should have many different revenue sources. You should have a diversified pricing portfolio, just like when you save for retirement. You don't put all your money in gold or, you know, Bitcoin. Be a really bad idea. You have a diversified approach with varying levels of risk and reward. And that's precisely what we teach inside agencies. You need a diversified portfolio. And then so the third step is having changed our mental map, our paradigm, and then instilled some new principles, then comes time for the actual practices, the daily changes in how we work with our clients. And some examples of that are we teach that before we go to scope of work, we need to step back and define what we call scope of value. Before we execute on what the client thinks they need, we need a much better in-depth discussion about what does success look like? What are the success metrics related to this assignment? So define scope of value. We teach the idea of always providing options. Never a single price, never a yes or no, take it or leave it, but a choice of yeses. So 3 is the magic number, sometimes 4, but you look at how all our client organizations approach pricing, they all offer options. You know, sign up for a cable plan, buy a new television, whatever, there's all options. And that's a very powerful practice that can improve margins almost overnight. And then I mentioned this very important practice of politely disrupting the client's flawed buying process. Adopt what we call the challenger sale mindset. which is to push back, politely push back, and show your clients a better way. So that's the process that agencies go through to get to a transformed revenue model: paradigm, principles, practices. And it, that doesn't have to take a long time. Sometimes agencies are all teed up for this. They're already thinking in this direction. They're curious about it. They've got a strong appetite to change their model. And so they jump right on board. But it might take some time to eventually convert all of your clients. And you will. And by the way, that's something we say right up front. This isn't just for new clients and new prospects. You will eventually convert all of your legacy clients to a new way of thinking as well. Take some time, but it can be done.
I was going to ask that question, actually. You know, is this easier to implement from scratch with new clients? Or have you seen examples where the shift is relatively straightforward with existing clients?
I used to believe that it was easier with new clients for the reasons you just described. But really, smart clients, whether they're new or existing, are almost instantly interested in a conversation about changing the remuneration structure. They don't like it either. They're always suspect of the timekeeping and is it really accurate and did it really take 30 hours and do you really need all these people? And there are, you know, all of those discussions, they really dislike that. And when you come in and say, hey, we'd like to propose a relationship that is based on outputs instead of inputs. So when we send you an invoice, it's not going to list the people and the hours. It's going to list what we actually did for you. How would you feel about that? Would you be interested in taking a look at that? 99.9% of clients say, well, yeah, actually, I think I would prefer that because I get a clearer view of what I'm actually buying from you instead of this nebulous, these people spent this much time doing I'm not sure what. So it resonates with current clients just as well as prospective clients.
And also, I have to say it, the account management team as well, it's so much easier because one of their biggest barriers is trying to justify hourly spend. It's horrible and it ruins the relationship.
Absolutely. It creates this mistrust. And actually, this has been studied, this idea of, well, you know, the cost and the disruptive effects of what we call the time machine. Recording, collecting, analyzing, justifying, writing off, transferring time, right? We've all been through that.
Yes.
Is somewhere between 15 and 20% of the total operating expenses of the typical agency is spent supporting the time beast. So that's an instant 15 to 20% contribution to your profits, and it creates a so much healthier culture internally because it's more honest instead of less honest way of doing business, right? It's more honest because we're saying, here's the actual work we're doing for you and here's the price and it's not going to change unless you change the scope and we're not going to play a shell game with you. It's a more straightforward way of doing business. As I say, most clients almost instantly like it.
So many more questions. I'm nodding furiously because it just feels like such a no-brainer. In terms of skill set, agencies over the years, particularly from the account management perspective, originally they were the challengers, I feel. They were used to selling, cross-selling, upselling, expanding the accounts. There was a commercial nous about account managers. Through the years, account managers have become order takers, which is something I'm trying to change in my little small world.
Yeah.
But let's talk about those agencies that have moved to the productization model. What have been the impact on the teams, the internal teams?
That is such an important point. I'm glad you brought that up because that might be at the top of our list of why the time-based system is wrong for agencies because it produces, as you're saying, a production utilization mentality inside the agency where the focus is on billability, on being busy, on filling scopes of work, and it creates a very reactive culture. In fact, I would say the time-based system creates disincentives for being proactive. You know, the criticism from clients is that our agencies are very responsive. They do what we ask, but they don't ever go above and beyond. They don't bring us ideas we didn't ask for. And why is that? Well, because it's not billable. There's no job number for proactivity. And in fact, there's a disincentive because you might get, you know, taken to task by your supervisors for why aren't you more billable? You know, why are you involving so many people in this meeting? Well, because I need the benefit of their brain power to solve this important business problem. But it's not in the estimate. You know, we can't cover all this time. So it's a disincentive to proactive thinking. It's a disincentive to collaboration. What we should have as an incentive is let's get to the best solution as fast as we can, employing the brains of the most senior people we can in the firm. And our business model today is the exact opposite of that, isn't it? Where the incentive is to replace senior people with junior people because they're less expensive and they have a lower hourly rate and they'll cost the client less. And it just this vicious cycle where we are now reactive order takers instead of proactive problem solvers. So changing your revenue model goes a long way in helping solve that problem. And it instills the mindset of we're in the business of selling solutions to business problems, not serving up competencies and capabilities at the request of our clients.
Going through this productization exercise, you said that, you know, you can do it fairly swiftly. If someone is listening to this as an agency owner, you know, a mid-sized agency firm that think, this makes total sense, I want to go on this journey. You've kind of clearly outlined the steps that you take with an agency. But what can they expect to achieve in terms of maybe profitability levels or reduction of staff numbers even? You know, what agency business model pops out the other side?
Yeah, well, that's been very well documented too. I mean, one of the numbers we pay the closest attention to is revenue per employee. And that's a simple calculation. It's taking your total revenue divided by the number of full-time equivalents. And the global average is somewhere around $150,000 US. Now, let's look at what is the revenue per employee at Google, $1.3 million. Apple, $2 million. McKinsey, $700,000 to $1 million. We are constrained. We have this non-scalable business model because for us to add revenue, we have to add people. So that is an unscalable, non-scalable business model. Whereas our clients, they have exponential pathways to growth because they monetize intellectual capital. They don't monetize hours. So our goal is to take agencies from 150,000 to 300,000 or more, double it, to take them from 15% profit to 30 or 40% profit. And that's not hyperbole. The agencies that have been through revenue model transformation achieve those kinds of margins because their margin is baked in to their products and programs. It's already factored in. It's not a matter of estimate versus actual and reconciliation and write-offs. And it's here's the program, here's the price, here's the talent that's going to solve this problem for you. Here's how long it's going to take us. And by the way, the price won't change as long as you don't change the scope. We commit to the price and we'll manage our resources to deliver a solution to your business problem. And we'll achieve our margins because we know historically that we can deliver these programs in this way. It also, this improved profitability leads to what I think is the most important benefit is that it allows us to afford and retain the very best talent, because right now we can't, right? Our clients will pay equivalent positions twice what we can pay. I mean, that's, you can look that up in the salary guides, take a position inside a brand organization and compare it to an agency. And we simply cannot match the salaries, and nor will we ever be able to match the salaries until we find a way to scale our business. And the productization is the answer to developing a scaled business because we're able to do more with fewer people. The better and better we get developing programs, the faster we can deliver it, the more money we make. In the hourly rate system, it's the exact opposite. The faster we deliver, the less money we make. It's pretty dumb as a business model when you think about it.
It right? Is.
The more expertise you have, the faster you can solve a business problem, the less money you earn. Now, can you imagine a surgeon taking that as a pricing strategy? Of course not.
No. Right? How closely linked is positioning with pricing? Mm-hmm. I read your book. I bought your book. I've got your book somewhere. Yeah. Make a Stand for Your Brand.
Yeah.
And clearly, well, I'm not going to put words in your mouth. I'd like to hear it from you. An agency, maybe an independent agency that's not particularly well positioned, neither vertically nor horizontally, but still wants the negotiation capital to be able to have a conversation with procurement, you know, their position as not a specialist. Can you talk a little bit about that and your viewpoint?
Oh, yeah, such an important question. There are many times that we are approached by an agency who wants to engage us to help solve their pricing problem. And as soon as we do our discovery work, we are able to detect that really what they have, first of all, is a positioning problem, right? That what they're offering is a commoditized bullet point list of service offerings. The first rule of economics is what's scarce is valuable. And if what you're providing to your clients is the same thing as every other agency down the street, I mean, good luck trying to command premium price for that. So we step in those cases, we step back and say, you know, first, let's work on your positioning strategy, because you can't be in the business of doing everything for everyone. You've got to offer high value solutions to business problems that are not easily found elsewhere. That's step one. And so, yeah, narrow the business model and the positioning strategy, absolutely critical. So, you know, we teach this idea that we're professional firms are in two different businesses, in the business of magic and logic. I borrowed this from an IPA white paper years ago, but I just love this way to describe it. So the magic business is the high value problem solving, concept development, strategic planning, kind of work that clients tend not to do well themselves. The logic business is the production, implementation, you know, distribution work that clients look at and say, you know, we could probably do that in-house, or we could find a lower cost provider, you know, offshore. And they're generally right about that. The problem is that we as an industry, we derive 80% of our revenue from the logic side and only 20% from the magic side. And it's the logic side that has all the pricing pressure and that is so commoditized. And so we try to encourage agencies to do less in the logic space and do more in the magic space so that they will be able to sell a premium program at more of a premium price. You'll never be able to do that trying to commoditize logic work.
Makes total sense. How can agencies start? You know, if they wanted to start right now, what action should an agency owner take that would be a good step in the right direction, even if it's just one or two actions that they can start this journey?
Well, we do have a list of things that every agency can do starting tomorrow that doesn't require them discontinuing time tracking, which freaks everybody out. You know, if I go in and say, well, the first thing you need to do is kill your timesheet system, you know, agencies just cannot imagine how they can run a successful business without it. Eventually, they come to see that they don't need that information. But in the short term, we say, fine, keep doing your timesheets if it gives you a sense of comfort. But the first thing you need to do is change your language. You can do that this afternoon. Language is the precursor to behavior change, and it's a precursor to changing your business model. And we're trapped in the bad habit of using the language of cost. We use the word cost instead of price, which is what the word the rest of the business world use. We talk about labor and hourly rates and burn down rates and charge out and, you know, shortfall and, you know, all this negative language of cost. We should be talking about solutions, benefits, you know, metrics of success, accountability, the things that instill confidence. And so we tell agencies, go through all of your documentation and take the word cost and change it to the word price, not estimate or cost estimate, but price or pricing. That's an important symbolic first step. Another is offer options. Starting this afternoon, you can, instead of serving up a single take it or leave it price, give your client three different prices, three different variations, three different flavors of how we can accomplish this project for you, from a small, medium, large, you know, premium to economy. And you will improve your sell-in rate by somewhere between 40 to 100% in the next several months. That doesn't require killing the time beast. And the other is start now identifying ways that you can start migrating away from being in the logic business to doing more in the magic world, which are strange concepts, but the high value, hard to find kind of work. Because when you go to the typical agency website at random, on the navigation bar, you'll see services and you click on that and this bullet point list. We do, you know, brand identity and social media and, you know, media planning. And so does every other agency in the world, right? We say, take that list of competencies and reimagine it as solution sets. Feature that on your website. And it just produces this change in mindset that you have articulated about agencies needing to become more proactive, less reactive. Well, it certainly helps if what you're selling are solution sets instead of widely available capabilities.
Thank you so much for that. That was really, really valuable. And I'm sure lots of people are taking notes. I'm conscious of time, but I want to squeeze in one question. It might be a little bit controversial, but I want you to be sort of honest. Are there any particular roles that you are seeing in the future in the agency model that are no longer as necessary as they have been for those businesses who are transitioning to more of a productized, value-based pricing model?
That is a question no one's ever asked me. I think there are some obvious candidates there. Project management changes pretty dramatically in this new model, because right now, project managers run around estimating time, tracking time, beating people up about having spent too much time. And that is a really misguided definition of scope. We say scope does not equal hours. Scope equals work completed, milestones met, deliverables, you know, done. And so project managers, their job is greatly simplified, because if you're selling programs and products, the resource requirements are already well-defined and well-established. So you will need fewer project managers, and the project management job will become a lot more fulfilling, less frustrating. So that's one obvious area. The idea that finance is in charge of pricing, that changes. Because if you look at client organizations, they have finance departments and chief financial officers that do cost accounting and tax planning and mergers and acquisitions and all that important stuff. But they don't do the pricing. They're not involved in pricing whatsoever. Client organizations have a separate pricing department with a chief pricing officer, and pricing decisions are made there. So it changes the role of finance. You don't need all these people tracking and dissecting hours and producing all these reports. So the finance function becomes a lot more streamlined and simplified. And so those would be my two quick answers in terms of how it might change staffing inside agencies.
And obviously, because of my own interest, how do you see the skill set of the account manager needing to change?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because and I spent all my formative years in client service, so I've experienced this firsthand. It puts the account manager in more of a consultative role and less of a service provider role, which is what you teach, right? This is exactly what we want account people to do, is think of yourselves more as, and think of your entire business more as a consultancy and less of an agency. And this is a big important trend right alongside AI and productization. I would put the need for agencies to model consultancies as maybe, you know, the third big trend happening. So who's on the front lines of that? Account people, client service. So their skill set, they need a lot more capabilities in strategic planning. They need to be less reliant on outside strategy groups and strategy departments. And right now, so many, I think you'd agree with this, so many account managers are really kind of glorified project managers, right? And we want the opposite. We want account people to be out leading the charge in terms of the definition of scope of value, defining the success metrics, putting together programs and recommendations to solve business problems, rather than organizing this list of deliverables and making sure that, you know, we're sticking to our time estimates. It's a frustrating job. I think today's account management job is a lot less rewarding than it used to be 30 or 40 years ago.
I absolutely agree with you. And I'm going to take those sound bites, because everything you've just said, I say and say. But my frustration is the business model itself.
Yeah.
It's not the lack of will to be more consultative, to be more commercially minded, to look at the business. They just don't have time. And why don't they have time? It goes back to the pricing and also positioning. So it's kind of, there is a model there somewhere. But thank you, Tim. I am conscious of time, and I just want to say a huge thank you. If people are listening to this and they think, I really would love to know more from Tim or work with him, who would you like to hear from and who can you help? And what's the best way of contacting you?
Sure. Well, I appreciate that. We work exclusively agency side. We do not work with client organizations. They have their armies of consultants helping them. So we advocate exclusively for agencies. Of all sizes and all different business models. So really doesn't matter if you are digital or media or social or PR, and size doesn't matter. I think that these principles apply across the board. Our website is probably the easiest way to get to know us, ignitiongroup.com. And I'd be happy to hear from you directly via email, twilliams@ignitiongroup.com. I write a lot on LinkedIn, publish a blog called Propulsion on our website. Those are also good ways to get to know us and learn more about the kind of work we do.
I'm following Tim, and I advocate for following Tim on LinkedIn and reading his blog. They're always value rich. They're always citations and sources, and everything's evidence-based. So I'll make sure to put all of those links, Tim, in the show notes. So any parting words before we wrap up?
Well, I guess I would say, you know, you can do this. It feels pretty aspirational when you hear this idea of a transformed revenue model. But if you just step back and think about the question, could we move from an inputs-based model to an outputs-based model without too much disruption to our current business? I think you'll quickly come to the conclusion that the answer is yes, we could do that. We could start within a matter of weeks of tracking and invoicing our clients for deliverables instead of hours. So if you imagine it that way, I think it doesn't sound quite as daunting.
That's good advice. Thank you so much, Tim.
Thank you. I appreciate you inviting me.
I hope you enjoyed my chat with Tim as much as I did. And once again, I'd highly recommend following Tim's work at ignitiongroup.com. And finally, I'm going to be running some free mini 20-minute training webinars for agency account management during the summer of 2024. So if you'd like to be notified when they happen and you're listening to this in time, then you can sign up for my weekly email by going to my website, accountmanagementskills.com. And I look forward to talking to you on the next one.